Welcome to the Medical Association of Georgia's award-winning Top Doc Show. With more than 8,000 members who care for patients in every specialty and practice setting, MAG is the leading voice for physicians in Georgia. Go to mag.org to join MAG if you're a physician in Georgia. And thanks to MAG Insurance Agency for its support as a sponsor.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Top Doc Show. I'm your host and MAG Interim CEO, Tom Cornegay. Today's episode is going to address climate change and Georgia Clinicians for Climate Action, which is a coalition of health professionals and stakeholder organizations that are concerned about the effects of climate change. Our guest is Dr. Rebecca Phillips-Born, who is a primary care pediatrician at Emory University and Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, and the Director of Climate, Health Education, and Clinical Partnerships for Emory's Resilience and Sustainability Collaboratory. It is also worth noting that Dr. Phillips-Born is a founding member of GCCA's Steering Committee. Our sincere thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. I'm happy to be here representing GCCA.
Appreciate that very much. So I guess to get started, I guess some just a little bit of personal background in terms of how you got involved with the climate, how and why you got involved with climate change in the beginning.
I actually was in climate change and public health prior to my career in medicine. And through that work, I saw the ways that climate change matters for human health, for human well-being and lives and livelihoods, not just ice sheets, polar bears, other species, as we sometimes saw it portrayed in the media, was just so clear. And it seemed like the physician voice was missing from these conversations. So really, climate change is part of the reason why I decided to become a physician in the first place.
That's great. And what would you tell the average Georgian why they should care about? Why does climate change matter?
Yeah, I would like to know that Georgia is among the states that are projected to be the most affected by climate change. And warming is a part of that. We are supposed to see by the end of the century warming from 3 to 13 degrees Fahrenheit on average, depending on the actions we take to reduce emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, in that time. But the average really doesn't tell the whole story. So within this average increase in temperature, it may not seem so remarkable, maybe thinking about the daffodils you saw in your backyard in December, we're seeing more days of extreme and even dangerous heat. Changes in rainfall, both risk of fire and flooding from what we have now been called cloudbursts or these torrential rains. And sometimes we see drought and flooding at different times of the year in the same place. And then, of course, these extreme tropical storms. So heat is part of it. It's not the whole story. But it is also perhaps the most worrisome for health and from the health perspective. So in the U.S., the U.S. Global Climate Change Research Program projects that most of our state, most of Georgia, will see between 20 and 50 days of extremely hot weather. And for us, that means greater than 95 degrees by mid-century. That's a lot of really hot days for a state that's already used to that hot, oppressive summer heat. That also means it won't be cooling down as much at night either. So it becomes more than just this hot, oppressive nuisance. It is that, but it means more days where it's too hot for our kids to play safely outside, where our athletes cannot exercise safely outside. It means lost labor, lost construction labor, lost labor for outdoor workers. And it's also this risk of serious acute and chronic heat illness, especially in urban communities where there's less green space. We see this heat island effect because the asphalt, we've all felt that heat radiating from the asphalt in a parking lot, it holds heat more. So it warms up more even in these urban areas. As heat can worsen ground level pollution, it worsens our air quality as well. That means exacerbations of respiratory illness like asthma and COPD, and also that we'll see more people developing respiratory illness. In fact, recently the American Lung Association's, their last report card gave five counties around Atlanta an F in our ozone pollution, which is not good. We're already, Georgians across the state, we're already seeing more disruptions to our daily routines too. This means disruptions to getting medical care. It means more days for those along the coast to see that these sunny day floods because of sea level rise that even submerge roads completely, like Highway 80 out to Tybee Island. It's just disruptive to our lives and livelihoods here. And then of course, we can't talk about climate change in Georgia recently without talking about Hurricane Michael. Those in our state and Southwest Georgia already know what powerful storms mean for their health and well-being. And Hurricane Michael was of course one of the billion-dollar storms of 2018. The economic impact to just our agricultural sector alone was enormous. These are just a couple of the examples of what climate change means for Georgia and for Georgia's health.
And what I assume children represent a vulnerable population. So can you talk about that and maybe some of the other especially vulnerable populations?
Yeah, and I'm a pediatrician, so I like to talk about children. And of course, pediatricians have a long history in Georgia with Georgia AAP of representing children's interests. And so kids are dependent on their caregivers. They're dependent on others to buffer them, to shield them against harm or exposures. Kids are also still growing, so that environmental exposures from climate change or otherwise at critical stages can disrupt that natural sequence of growth and development and really have lifelong impacts and prevent kids in some cases from fulfilling their potential. In fact, in 2019, the Lancet Countdown on Climate and Health, which is one of the entities that looks at the impacts of climate change on health specifically, emphasized that if we don't take actions to curb greenhouse gas emissions, climate change will profoundly affect the life of every child born today. Last year in Georgia, our AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, released a resolution stating why climate change matters for the health of Georgia's children and encouraging pediatricians to do something about it. And of course, this brings up, as far as children are concerned, one of the profound issues about climate change. There's this question of intergenerational justice. What we leave, the legacy that we leave to those children who have not had anything to do with this problem, but will inherit it from us. But that's children as a vulnerable population, and two, I think about as a pediatrician, but there are lots of other groups that are vulnerable. And I think that it's easy to make the connections now, and we're really living through a pandemic, COVID-19, this pandemic of zoonotic origins. It's also important to realize that while some populations are more vulnerable, this matters for all of us. We are all affected by this. It's clear, though, that those like children who've contributed the least to the problem are affected the most. So one way to think about this is about vulnerability in the climate space is a combination of someone would be to be exposed, to be in harm's way, to danger from climate change, and how likely they are to experience harm if they were to be exposed. And this could be those whose social situation, jobs, or activities put them at risk. So those with inadequate housing, outdoor workers, healthy athletes. And it's also those with existing chronic health conditions, both physical health conditions and mental health conditions. So there are so many populations that every physician in practice could think of and think of who this would matter for in their practice. Some that are really worth mentioning are pregnant women. So we have more and more evidence linking poor birth outcomes, low birth weight, prematurity, even congenital conditions to heat exposure during pregnancy. These things are hugely important for a baby's trajectory for the rest of their life. And Georgia is already among states that have the worst birth outcomes already. So the impact of heat on these is particularly worrisome as this evidence is starting to accumulate. And I also touched a little bit on this intergenerational justice questions, but it's really important to think about climate change as an issue for social justice as well. not just around the world, thinking about countries that have contributed least to carbon emissions, but thinking about communities within the United States who contributed the least as well. So recent studies, particularly I'm thinking of a study out of Virginia with Jeremy Hoffman as the author, have shown how urban communities of color that are already burdened by historical racism through policies like redlining are disproportionately affected by climate change too. So these researchers linked places that were subject to historical redlining and that they have hotter temperatures on hot days in the surrounding areas and more heat-related illness because of that urban heat effect in these same communities. So there's a way here that physicians have a voice in confronting these deep challenges of structural racism too.
And can you provide some context in terms of timeline where we are today, where we might be 10, 20 years from now, with or without taking additional action, your views on that?
Yeah, and then I'll go right to the evidence out there. So in 2017, we know from historical records that the world passed the 1 degree Celsius mark of warming. So it's just a fraction of the warming that we're expected to see by the end of the century, but that was that landmark 1 degree Celsius. So we are already seeing those effects of climate change now. We can look back on this year and think of the pandemic. We can think of storms in Louisiana earlier this year. We can think of the wildfires on the West Coast. And we know that we are already seeing those effects of climate change. So the time is already now. This is already occurring. But how severe these consequences become is still up to us. So we're seeing the health effects, but we have time to limit the worst change.
Okay, and can you cite any kind of examples of ways that climate change has affected the healthcare and hospital systems?
Yes. One example that comes to mind is during Hurricane Maria. During that time, people who were in practice will recall shortages of a lot of medical devices and pharmaceuticals because of the companies that were affected in Puerto Rico by the hurricane. Yes, it was a local storm, but the impacts were felt globally. So the FDA actually monitored 90 medical products, and that included 40 drugs. This changed the way that we treat patients in a hospital setting. It changed the protocols that we use for really routine things like ruling out neonatal sepsis. There were shortages of commonplace things like IV fluid bags at that time, so that we were having to adapt our practice to these shortages. And I think this, people see this even more intuitively now with the coronavirus supply chain impacts. The effects of supply chain impacts are really prominent and have been throughout the last year. There's also issues of hospital evacuations affecting the healthcare system. So there was a recent case study that was done looking at Memorial Hospital in Savannah with researchers from Memorial and from UGA. And they're looking at how much a hospital evacuation actually costs the hospital system. And they found that that impact even before the storm arrived. So not talking about damages from the storm, but even before the storm arrived, just the process of logistics to get everyone safely evacuated was almost $10 million just from those evacuation costs and the loss of revenue. So it's not trivial for hospital systems from a financial perspective as well. And it's not hypothetical. So Hurricane Irma, we know, is a huge evacuation event. 35 hospitals in Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina had some level of either full or partial evacuation. And for us in Atlanta, we may not be as likely to be in the path where we need to evacuate because of a hurricane or extreme weather event, but we receive those folks who are displaced. And for Irma, that there were almost 7 million people who were asked to evacuate. And if you look at Google Maps, even of just what traffic looks like during that evacuation, it looks like a red line up to Atlanta. So our healthcare system has to be prepared to see those folks who are evacuating from their medical home and be able to care for them without being overwhelmed here as well.
I guess taking it down to a more personal level, how do you see this or what kind of impact or effect has this had on you and your patients?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think these impacts really affect how I have approached medicine, how we talk about it, how we teach students, because I do medical education as well, and how we care for patients. There's an urgency here to the climate question that is not quite fully reflected in our day-to-day practice yet. We talked a little bit about when we kind of got to the 1 degrees Celsius mark of warming, but the experts in this area, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, this consortium of experts from all over the world who look at our timeline, has said we really just have until 2030 to reduce our global greenhouse gas emissions by 45% from 2010 levels. And then we have to be a net neutral planet by 2050. So I feel that urgency every single day. And I see how important physicians can be in that conversation. So it makes me really keen to consider and to teach students and residents to consider these environmental determinants of health, because we know we're going to be stuck with some of the consequences of climate change, but also the bigger picture when caring for the patient right there in front of me. Start looking for links with climate exposure, so we start to see them. This can be worse pollen season, because pollen plants that make pollen like ragweed that we all love to hate actually makes more pollen in a CO2 rich environment. And we have a longer pollen season because it gets warmer earlier and stays warm later. It means that thinking about how our patients are experiencing respiratory exacerbations for kids, that's a very common problem where we're seeing asthma exacerbations, and making sure that they think about how heat should figure into their asthma action plan, the guidance we give them to manage and control their asthma. Making sure that I'm talking to them about mold and mildew exposure, has their home been in a flood event? It's also, we've cared for in my practice some of those regionally displaced folks who've had to leave their home because of extreme weather events and who may not have gone back, or who were just displaced temporarily, but also more kind of globally displaced so-called climate migrants. These are things that we're seeing in practice and that physicians need to be aware of. On the flip side, we're also seeing more people who are coming to doctors and asking about how they can make healthier and more sustainable choices in their day-to-day life. So they're looking to doctors for information about these.
So I guess that leads to the next question, is what kind of advice do you have for your fellow physicians to become more familiar with the issue in general and in turn to have conversations with their patients?
Yeah, I think just to make sure that physicians realize that climate change does pose harm to our patients. It presents us with new and emerging medical challenges. It disrupts our care delivery. So physicians need to know about climate change to take better care of our patients and to counsel them. This means adapting our practice so we can recognize and treat these changing patterns of emerging infection, emerging non-communicable diseases like heat-related nephropathy, a new type of chronic kidney disease that we're seeing. And it means that so much of what we talk about with patients already in that privileged space can be part of this problem, like healthy diets, active lifestyles. These are better for our patients and part of the solution to climate change anyway. Even eating less red meat. Red meat has a really large carbon footprint, so that diets that rely more on plants, some people call these flexitarian or plant-forward diets, are better for our patients and can really help them. It can really be part of the solution to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. We have a really trusted voice. We know how to look at the evidence base, how to communicate science to people who are not scientists. And we can emphasize in this discussion that climate change is a health problem. So that's kind of why physicians need to be part of the discussion. Still, some people may be wary about talking about climate change with their patients in their practice, but it's kind of like we talk about anything. We link what we're talking about to the health of the patient in front of us when that's appropriate. So it could be, hey, it's not just your imagination that your allergies are worse this year. Let's look at how we need to think about hot days and those code orange days in your asthma action plan or your COPD plan. Let's show you how to find local air quality alerts so that you know the days that you probably, if you need to be outside, you probably need to do it a little bit earlier. For any patient, adult or child, who depends on a daily dose of medication, like really depends on it for their health and well-being, let's talk to them about, do you have enough supply during hurricane season? If you were to not have access to care, to lose your power, to not be able to get refills, do you have enough on hand? Do you have a disaster preparedness plan for your family? There are other medicines that we actually prescribe patients that blunt their body's ability to thermoregulate, that blunt their natural heat and water homeostasis mechanism. So making sure that we talk to patients about their risk if they're going to be out on extremely hot days for heat illness and dehydration and how to be careful about that. There are other medicines we give that require a certain temperature to be effective. So they can't be stored in a really hot environment. That's really common things like insulin, synthyroid, medicines that should really never be stored in a car. Think about your car in a parking lot on a hot Atlanta day and how hot it gets. We really should never be storing some of those heat sensitive medications in cars. Even albuterol, the canister has an alert on it if you read the package insert that it can explode at over 120 degrees. I've never seen an albuterol canister exploding, but I've also never tried the experiment and put one out in my car on a hot day either. But for when I'm talking to high school athletes who may have asthma and are coming to me for their sports physical, this is something that we can bring up, and it, we're linking it right back to the patient in front of us for this, for these discussions. We can ask them too. So linking it to the patient right in front of you and then making sure that you're screening for environmental determinants of health, just like we screen for social determinants of health. So this could be asking about, has your electricity been turned off in the last few months? Are you having trouble paying your electricity bills? Think about trying to kind of live through a Georgia summer without air conditioning and what we can do to help families there. There are weatherization programs that exist. So programs where we can refer patients that help kind of seal the envelope of the house. And that can reduce the household's mold and mildew problems because you're like improving your indoor air quality. It can make a more energy efficient home, so reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and it can also save the family money on their utility bills so that they're then able to have more disposable income for food, for medicine, for other essentials. But we don't always kind of screen for energy security now like we might screen for food security, even though there are programs that can help fix out. And then just asking those patients, especially with chronic conditions, do you have an emergency preparedness plan in place to make sure that they are safe in the event that a disaster does occur? So it's not a political discussion. It's a discussion about the health and well-being of that patient right in front of you.
And I did want to ask you about Georgia Clinicians for Climate Action in terms of its mission and goals.
Yeah, so bottom line, Georgia Clinicians for Climate Action is an organization to help protect the health of Georgians, but from that climate perspective. So we engage health professionals and patients to learn about climate change and the health benefits of climate action. And the reason is to so that we can work together and find solutions that mitigate climate change, protect the health of Georgians, and support this shift that is really inevitable. We know that we're going to have to shift towards reduced greenhouse gas emissions to achieve a healthy and sustainable future.
And so how can our audience get additional information on GCCA and climate change in general?
Well, we welcome anyone to to join who would like to. GCCA is a state chapter of the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health. And the Med Society Consortium on Climate and Health has a website that is just filled with robust resources geared towards physicians. And our webpage, our GCCA webpage, is housed within that Med Society Consortium on Climate and Health main webpage. So look there. Definitely welcome folks to check us out. And then for those who are already active in their professional society, like their American Academy of Pediatrics, American Medical Association, see what folks are, what their society is already doing in this area and how you can help, what resources exist to support your practice. For those who want to look at kind of the sustainability question and bringing sustainability to their healthcare institution, Healthcare Without Harm is a great resource. Some of the major journals, like the New England Journal of Medicine, has a whole section now devoted to the climate crisis and the practice of medicine because of just these profound implications that we've talked about, climate change on health.
Great. And before I let you get back to taking care of your patients, are there any kind of key final takeaway messages that you'd like to deliver?
Thank you. And thank you for letting me talk today. I think I want physicians to realize that climate change matters for health. It matters for the health of their patients. And they have a role to play in this conversation.
Thank you so much. My sincere thanks to Dr. Phillips-Bourne for addressing some important issues today. I'd also like to thank and applaud her and the rest of our tireless and heroic physicians and allied healthcare professionals for everything that they do every day to take care of Georgians. With that, from everybody at MAG, I'd like to thank you for watching, and we'll catch up with you on the next episode of Top Docs. Thank you.
Thanks for watching this episode of Top Docs. Please share this program with your colleagues and family and friends. Remember to follow MAG on Facebook and Twitter. And don't forget that you can get past episodes of the show at mag.org/topdocs. From everybody at MAG, we look forward to catching up with you on our next episode of Top Docs.